Hello and welcome once again to the two-hour arts program here on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM called The Table. And the first half is, of course, Talking Arts. Tonight on Talking Arts, we've got this month's segment for Jenny Ward, our roving reporter, our roving arts journalist. And she's got a few interesting segments. She's got artist John Wilson, flamenco artist Veronica, and we've also got a few other bits and pieces. She's done a little bit of a roundup of what's on and about. We were going to have a piece on the Cadumbra Drawing Award, but she's going to save that up for next month. So we'll have that in the frame with Jenny Ward, and then after a couple of tracks, we'll have an interview I did with Melissa Kelly, who's another one of our special guest artists who are going to be exhibiting down at Gang Gang Gallery this Easter weekend. Now, for all you Gang Gang boffins, yes, the gallery is open. Yes, you can go along any day. And, of course, it's the new Hands on Clay 2024, the fourth iteration of Hands on Clay at the gallery. And it starts on Thursday. Well, starts today. But the opening is, of course, on Saturday. Starts about 2 in the afternoon. Go along. As you heard last week from Peter Wilson, it's going to be pretty exciting. Peter's still in Tokyo. He won't be there. But there will be another 12 artists who are going to be there, including Melissa. So, of course, the other artists that we've already interviewed, Lisa and Sarah O'Sullivan. So do get down there and have a look and have a chat to the artists and enjoy the all the ceramics for the Hands on Clay exhibition. Okay, we will now have a song and then we'll kick it off.
This is Talking Arts, our weekly focus on a wide array of art forms hosted by the Professor every Thursday from 6.
Well-known Springwood artist Christine Hyde is exhibiting her beautiful flowing alcohol ink works at Katoomba's NWC Gallery, formerly Gallery 188, from tomorrow. Christine is also conducting workshops on the use of alcohol inks at the same gallery, Wednesday, May the 8th, 1 till 4, and the same day, 5 until 8. Sunday, May 19, 4 until 7. And with Mother's Day in May, a workshop gift voucher could be the ideal gift for any mum. Christine talks about her love for the medium and how she makes it work. So, Christine, tell me about the exhibition that's coming up in Katoomba.
Yes, it starts next week, next Thursday, the 28th. I'll be delivering it all there on Monday afternoon, and it will be set up to start at the end of the week at Gallery NWC in Katoomba Street. And it will go for 2 weeks.
Oh, that's good.
And it will be open all over Easter as
That's
well.
What I was about to ask you.
Yes, which I'm very pleased about. So every day it will be open. So if anyone's strolling the streets of Katoomba and they're maybe just before dinner or after lunch, it's a good place to pop in and have a look at what's been keeping me busy and off the streets for 12 months.
So you seem to specialise in alcohol inks.
I do.
And that's what this exhibition will be.
It is, yes. I have I don't know whether I've got more than Catherine will need for the gallery. I think I probably will, but the majority of them are alcohol inks. They're on different surfaces, so that will be interesting, I think. There's polypropylene, which is a Yuppo, I think is the brand name. I've got them on aluminium.
That's fascinating.
It is, yeah. They look stunning on the aluminium.
I bet they do.
And also on canvas, prepared canvas as well, yeah. And
so tell me about alcohol inks. I'm fascinated by it. They're gorgeous flow.
Yeah, they flow and it's alcohol-based, mm-hmm. So there's some alcohol in the actual ink itself, and they're basically an intense pigment which have been dropped into an alcohol solution.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And you do need a very smooth surface for them to work. They won't work on a standard piece of paper or a canvas. They'll just sort of grab and not go anywhere, and you won't get those lovely flowy effects with them. And instead of water, if you're a watercolorist, you use water. In this case, you use a product called isopropyl, which is actually a cleaning product as well. And you mix that to water the pigment down. The more you put in, just like water, the looser the colour will be and the more diluted it will be. But they blend beautifully together. You get a whole lot of variance. And on the smooth surfaces, it just flows wherever you want it to go. And while it's very intuitive, what happens with them, you can, with a lot of practice, get a good measure of control over what you're
doing. That's what I was just about to ask you. Yeah. How would you know? I mean, you've got an idea in your head what you're going to do, and you've got your colours and everything.
Yes.
But if it flows, how do you know where it's going to go?
Well, I can stop the flow.
Can you change
the flow. If it's on the polypropylene paper, I can move the paper to suggest where the ink will go, where it will stop. And I've got other tools like brushes and good quality artist rags, which I move into the composition to make it do what I want it to do.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so it's I've been doing it for about 3 years, so I've honed the craft,
So you were saying it's very popular in America.
That's where I first saw it, yes. I was doing watercolour, which I still love, but I just came across this by chance, and I looked at some of the videos and I was entranced by what they could do with these inks and the surfaces they were using them on, and decided I'd have a go myself. And then I liked it so much that I stopped doing all the other mediums. I put my oils and my acrylics and my watercolours down. For 3 years, I just spent entirely on this medium, seeing how far I could push it.
Mm.
You know, what would work, what doesn't work, what surfaces I can use it on, how do I have to prep a surface to get the best result from the ink. Would it work on, is it better for things under glass, or can I do it on things?
I was going to, can you do it under glass?
Oh, yes. Well, you would with the paper, treat it like a watercolour painting.
Yeah.
And you would put it under glass. You'd put it in a mat under a frame. Yeah. I probably have about 5 or 6 like that in my exhibition
that's coming up.
Yeah, they're framed.
So tell me about painting on aluminium.
Similar thing I wanted to explore other surfaces, and I got the idea that why not a metal or something like that, something very smooth. I used to go to Bunnings and touch surfaces of everything.
Who's that strange woman?
Yeah, who's that strange lady touching those wooden things? And I found some products, but they weren't quite right. They could warp, for example.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I had to put those aside. I did nice work on them, but they weren't archival enough, so I couldn't use them. And then I came across the composite aluminium. And, of course, you could buy it in little squares.
Oh, great.
30 by 30. And I like to paint big.
Right.
So I found somebody who would cut the pieces to size, like 90 centimetres by 60 or 80 or whatever, that was sort of more the size that I liked to paint.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, and then I found somebody who would frame them for me. So they're in a nice float frame. So they just look like a normal painting on a wall. And they're quite lightweight.
I was about to ask you.
They're not heavy.
Yeah.
But in terms of the inks, they work beautifully because they've got the smoothness. So I've done quite a number of those that will be in the exhibition as well.
Great.
Of various sizes. And, they're all framed. They look quite attractive in my personal view.
Of course.
and they're vivid. The inks can be extremely vivid, and you can paint the same painting in another medium on canvas and look at the two, and the one in the inks glows.
Oh.
It just has a different different finish and a luster that you just don't get with other mediums. I think that's what I like so much about it.
It'd be great. It how often do you paint?
Pretty much every day.
You do, do you?
Yes, I do.
And do you get excited when you wake up in the morning and think?
Often before that. I have been known to get up before the sun if I get an idea and go down to my studio and just work on a piece. Yes,
it's
paint when the mood takes me.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, I want to know about the workshops that you're going to do. This all sounds so incredibly interesting.
Yes, well, I've been running workshops for a while at home.
Mm-hmm.
I do them about twice a year. I like to do them when the weather's nice because we sit out on my big balcony and it overlooks the bush, and I sort of feel that's good for your creative juices. I was invited to do the workshops at the gallery following my exhibition, and that'll be in May, early May.
Actually, that'd be a great Mother's Day present, wouldn't it?
I hadn't thought about that. Thank you.
Just ask me.
Thank you for suggesting it. yes, it would indeed. And they're short, 3 hours, which is plenty of time for me to show you, to demonstrate, and for you to play with the inks. I'll have everything there. You don't bring anything with you, just your sense of creativity and fun.
Mm.
And then I'll hand everything over and you have a play, and you'd be surprised what you can create yourself in that short period of time. And I believe, too, the workshops at the gallery, I think Catherine, the director, has an idea of keeping them back and perhaps doing a little display of the students' work. So that'll be lovely if that comes to fruition. Mm. Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about that in the class when I get some more detail.
So tell me, what are the dates?
The dates for the workshops, I think it's Wednesday the 8th of May.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be two. You get a choice of three workshops, so two on the Wednesday the 8th of May, one in I think starts about 1 o'clock and the other one starts about 5 o'clock, so it's an early evening one. And then for those that can't make that, if you're working, we're doing one on a Sunday, late Sunday afternoon. I think that's the, I've got to remember, the 12th, is it? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, yeah. Makes sense, use my fingers. Whatever that Sunday is that follows anyway is the other date. So there'll be a choice of three sessions, and it's all up online at the moment on the gallery's website.
Which is NWC.
NWC.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can go there. You just click classes. You'll see my name with an expression of interest. You just fill out the form and Catherine will get back with all the details. Yes, that's how it works, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
You do, not through me directly. You must go through the gallery for the expression of interest.
Mm, okay.
Yeah,
sounds good luck.
Looking forward to that one.
There you are.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Easter in the Blue Mountains is always a great opportunity to wander through the many galleries. Here's just a sample of what's on. The Blackheath Art Prize, an exhibition of the Blackheath Art Society members, will be open all over Easter. More than 80 pieces of original works will be hanging, and they're all for sale. Gallery NWC in Katoomba will be featuring Christine Hyde's alcohol ink works, and Kadumba, while not open on Easter Sunday unless by appointment, is opening Easter Monday. Flamenco in Katoomba? Why not? Katoomba resident and graphic designer Veronica Gilmer, is the creator of dance group Flamenco Vero. The Flamenco Studio is a charming mirrored space in Bursal Lane in Katoomba, where all things flamenco happen. Classes from beginner to advanced, some with flamenco guitar accompaniment and percussive hand clapping. Veronica, tell me about the connection between flamenco and the Blue Mountains.
I think it originally started with a man called Max Kirkby, who was fondly known as Maximiliano, and he started flamenco classes here. And the students that come to me now, many of them went to Max then, and it's many years ago now. It has to be over 25 years ago.
Yes. What's the attraction with flamenco?
It's more complex than other forms of, or many other forms of dance, in as much as you have to worry about the rhythms as well as the movement. So
it's a big learning curve.
You're a percussive instrument as well as movement and learning how to be graceful and turns and body work.
So you were a flamenco dancer?
Yes, yes.
Where?
In Spain.
Yeah,
I
worked there.
I love the music and eventually met my soon-to-be husband in Sydney. I'm from Melbourne originally. Mm-hmm. And we went to Spain and I managed to get work there, which was lucky, I think.
Do you speak the language?
Yes, I do. Oh. Yeah. I'd studied ballet, so I already had quite a good dance background and managed to fake it and get a job and never looked back.
And playing in clubs or over there?
I worked in various places, but I started in what they call tablao flamenco, which is where people sit in a row and you clap while other people do a solo. So you have to learn to improvise, which is terrific, and you also do some chorus singing. It's a bit like a theatre restaurant.
Okay.
Okay, so it's only for flamenco and people who go there to sit quietly and watch the show. The other forms of work are theatre, where you probably join a company, and then you have to go to rehearsals, learn routines, and then you might go away for 3 months and dance the same choreography for 3 months. And then I used to find it really difficult. I'd get back to Madrid and I'd been doing 3 months of the same choreography over and over, and I couldn't remember what I was doing when I was improvising, and so it would take a little while to get back into it. And also the clapping, which is you're a percussive instrument because you clap for other people. Oh, okay, so we've got two styles. There's the softer one like this, which
where
is
your hand is almost
like a
bent over a bit.
Yeah, so you kind of form a little hole in there, which acts like a sound thing. And then you've got they're called palmas sordas. And then we've got the loud one like that, which you have to really be able to do it softly and loudly. Yeah. Mm. And then you work percussively within those. There's many sounds within those two sounds.
That's
too.
Nice.
Yeah. Great fun.
What about the fabulous, when I think of a flamenco dance, I also think of the wonderful gowns, the outfits. Did you get into that at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. In the olden days, we used to have to starch them. It was agony. You know, you'd have to and then iron them. And then, of course, they made a fabulous noise rustling around the stage. Mm. In fact, that was my introduction to flamenco in Melbourne. I had a couple of other mothers. She used to teach at NIDA, actually. Betty Williams. She was wonderful. And she took me to see my first flamenco dancing. And this woman walked out on the stage with this white frock, what we call a bata de cola, which has the long tail, and it was starched, you know, sticking up in the air, and she walked slowly across the stage and her arms and her hands moving. It was beautiful. And all of a sudden she kicked this tail up and all this dust went up on the stage, and I thought, oh, that's what I want to do. So it sort of started there, and then I had to try and find a teacher. That wasn't easy. And look, I, you know, dabbled around and went to different people, but I really learned when I went to Spain.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
So tell me about the classes here that you have in Bursal Lane Studios.
We have my flamenco classes are on Wednesdays, plus I run a few practice groups during the day. on other days. And then we have Zoom classes with Thomas Arroquero, who's a wonderful choreographer and dancer. We have workshops sometimes with another person called Elena Varga, who's a much loved and fabulous flamenco dancer. And then we have other people teaching other forms of dance on other nights. We have burlesque dancing, contemporary dancing, bachata, salsa, tango. There's all kinds of forms of dance. We have someone who's going to be teaching Brazilian drumming. There's another person wants to do a comedy show once a month. So yes, we have a very diverse stable of creative people who use the studio. And we just, it's a very good.
And it's a delicious looking studio. And there's sort of incredible red walls, gorgeous. Warm. Big mirrors. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It used to be the Dance Dimension studio where they have children and dancing. Yeah, they're lovely girls. And that was bright pink then. But we thought red was much more
appropriate.
Our colour, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, great. Thank you.
This is Talking Arts, our weekly focus on a wide array of art forms hosted by the Professor every Thursday from 6.
Double demerits come into force this long weekend, which means if you're caught speeding, using a mobile phone illegally, or not wearing a seatbelt or motorcycle helmet, you're in for double the points. And lost points can quickly add up to a lost license. So with double demerits this holiday period, you can stop it or cop it.
Are you struggling to save for your first home deposit? If you don't want to wait years to buy a home, Afford Assist can offer 1% deposit home loan. Its innovative deferred deposit solution makes it possible to secure a loan, buy with an initial part deposit, defer and pay the balance of the deposit without interest. A home loan with an Afford Assist deferred deposit can reduce mortgage stress by reducing the loan amount and thousands on interest payments. Call Anthony on 1-800-961-108 or visit affordassist.com and let us assist you to buy your first home.
Experience Nocturnal at Scenic World these school holidays. As the sun sets, jump aboard the world's steepest train to explore the Lunar Light Journey. Along the rainforest boardwalk, you'll find illuminated native creatures and magical light installations. Take a quest to unlock the Gundungurra creation story. Then float amongst the stars on the Skyway cable car and finish with marshmallows toasted on an open fire. Nocturnal at Scenic World, after dark from April 5 to May 4. Book now at scenicworld.com.au.
Attention all adventurers in the greater Blue Mountains region. Get ready to explore like never before with the Ask Roz Tourism Show, your ultimate guide to the wonders of the Blue Mountains. Join host Robin Catchy Catch Love as she uncovers hidden gems, shares insider tips, and has interviews with local services and businesses that will enrich your visit. Reaching over 1 million people every month, the Ask Roz digital platform is where the adventure starts. Tune in to Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM every Friday at 9 a.m. and let the journey begin.
For Katoomba artist John Wilson, growing up in the Blue Mountains instilled a great love for rugged landscapes. However, he began his professional life as a musician and not an artist. Not until his mid-20s did he decide to devote his life to art. John's gallery in Narrow Neck Road, Katoomba, features many of his exquisite landscapes and his favourite gum trees. So, John, you've been painting for quite a long time.
Yes, actually 54 years now.
So you've almost got it down.
Oh, no.
So what inspired you? Did you start as a child painting?
Look, I was sort of interested as a child, but other things came in the way, and it wasn't until my early 20s I was working as a full-time musician that I began painting. And I fortunately for that time I was painting pretty much every day for 13 to 14 years before I retired from music to go painting full-time.
Were you formally trained as an artist?
No, look, I wasn't formally trained, but I think after about six or seven years, I realised I needed help. Right. And I was very lucky to get with most of Australia's top landscape painters at that time, and they were all teaching and doing workshops. Oh. And perhaps it's the OCD, but I did over 40 workshops.
That was a little OCD, I have to say.
In about 4 or 5 years.
Gosh.
But the learning curve really accelerated.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're here in your fabulous studio. I'm just looking at this gorgeous painting on the wall over here with gum trees. So what is it that attracts you to gum trees to paint them?
Look, I think they're just a classic part of the Australian landscape. Mm-hmm. Every tree has its own character and gesture, and whilst there are millions and millions of gum trees, every now and again you just see one, and whether you're lucky enough that it's the shape or the light or whatever it is, but you'll see one that you think, wow, that tree looks great.
The character of it, isn't it?
That's it. Even this morning I was in the Hartley Valley and there was this beautiful old red gum, and the early morning light was just gorgeous. It was sort of sparkling and that beautiful fresh feel of early morning.
Mm.
And they're wonderful things to paint.
Mm. Are they more difficult than other parts of the landscape?
Well, I've often joked and said I really should charge double the price, because you've often got to paint a full landscape plus a portrait of a tree.
Mm.
So there's a lot of work, and there's also a lot of work in painting a good gum tree with all of the subtleties that are involved.
There are, aren't there? I'm just looking at this one here. There's a lot to it.
Mm. Mm. There are.
And plein air painting is what gets you fancy.
Yeah, look, plein air goes back right through to the early Australian painters, or the first Australian painters that painted Australia in an Australian way, and that was Streeton, Roberts, Gruner, McCubbin, and all of those great early painters. And since then, of course, there's still been that movement of professional artists like myself and those who went before us, between Streeton and today's artists. And basically, it's just most of us have a real love and affinity with the landscape. And it's just, well, it's a wonderful way of, and it's a wonderful career to be able to try and paint your own impressions of our beautiful landscape.
Mm, fabulous. Now, tell me about your workshops and the fairly frenetic schedule that you did, at least had previously.
Oh, gee. Well, I'm doing a little bit less than I have been doing. I'm 78 now, so, however, we've still got a very busy schedule. I teach Australian landscape in oils, intermediate to advanced, so we're sort of getting mostly painters that are pretty keen to paint the landscape well.
Do they already know what they're doing?
Well, yes. Yeah, most people that we take in the workshops, you know, sort of already would have a reasonable amount of experience in oils.
Mm.
And so we sort of try and take it from there and push forward with that.
Now, they're not just local up here, the workshops, are they?
No. Look, every year we do four or five-day workshops and one 10-day workshop. And for the rest of the year, I'm travelling basically anywhere between, well, all over Australia, really. We take groups up to Alice Springs to paint in the McDonnell Ranges, and we take groups across to Lord Howe Island again to paint, you know, the beautiful seascapes on the island there, as well as right through Australia, right out in the middle of Queensland to Blackall. From Bowen down to, well, across to Adelaide and everywhere in between.
So you don't do outside Australia anymore?
No. Look, I used to teach in America, and we used to take groups, five-star tours through China, painting tours, but I've sort of cut all those out. I'm happy just to work at home now.
Mm-hmm. So, for instance, with China, without sounding like a dopey question, how different is the landscape to what you see here? And do the same rules apply?
Well, the atmosphere is slightly different colour.
I can imagine that.
However, when you get out in the country, it's an incredible country, and it's different. The whole structure, particularly of the mountainous areas, mm-hmm. is very different, but I really love it. Going back to 2007, I had an exhibition in Beijing and I painted all the pictures for that exhibition from various parts of China. I worked all along the Yellow River, the Yangtze River, and throughout the country areas of China to the south, up in the northwest and up as far north as a city called Harbin, which is called the Ice City. And it was minus 30 when I was there at the time. So, but no, been great landscape. Mm-hmm. It's probably very tragic, the amount of pollution that's right through all of Asia, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. just China, but the whole Asia region.
So you wouldn't get that clarity that you get here?
No, it's very atmospheric, we would say, as artists.
Mm. Such a good word.
So do you paint every day, John?
Pretty much every day, yep. Mm. Usually if I'm just at home here, I'll just work, well, pretty much every day. And then maybe every 3 to 4 weeks I'll have a few days framing.
Oh, okay. You frame your own works?
Yes.
Oh, good.
But again, if it's a fine day, I usually try and head out and paint on location.
Do you have an idea in your head what you're going to paint?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I just let the subject choose me usually.
Do you?
Yep.
Oh, that's great. All right, thank you very much. Good to talk to you.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. Shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5.
Crazy if you let.
Hello and welcome to Talking Arts here on the GBM Can Art Show called The Table that we do every Thursday night. Now, this is our first interview for Thursday, and we're going to have a chat to another person who's exhibiting at the Hands on Clay 2024, the fourth version of Hands on Clay, and that's Melissa Kelly. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
No, thank you.
Now, Melissa's a bit shocked because I've just rung her up out of the blue.
Yes.
But as I was explaining to Melissa, we're working our way through different people who are going to be exhibiting. Yep. We've talked to Lisa Edwards and Peter Wilson and a few others, Sarah O'Sullivan. And so you're next on the list, Melissa.
Very good, yes. I'm a bit stunned, actually, to be on the list to start with. But, yeah, I'm honoured and really proud to be showing alongside some of those artists.
So have you been in Hands on Clay before?
No, I haven't. Like, I've only been doing clay since 2016.
Right.
So relatively new to it, and I've had a couple of solo exhibitions since 2022. But, yeah, like Lisa Edwards saw my work at Dunny Do Art Unlimited last year.
All right.
And, yeah, Sharon was kind enough to extend an invitation to me.
Excellent.
So, yeah, so some of these artists that I'm keeping alongside besides like gods to me. I've been following them and watching them and building my practice on, you know, watching them and different things. So it's a pretty amazing experience for me.
Well, I was having a look at the Facebook page. As you probably know, Sharon and Kayleen like post every 5 minutes. But
they do an amazing job. Yeah.
But you've had a bit of a reaction to your stuff. So
yeah, it's probably something people don't see a lot of. And I live in a town where, you know, I've got Jeff Thomas works here as well, and he's been doing ceramics for 50 years, and I'm relatively new to it. But we work in really different ways, whereas he's very focused on the practice and the process of ceramics and the materials and things like that, where I'm more about telling a story.
Of course.
And developing that side of things. So really different, but I'm also fascinated in and admire what Jeff does as well, you know, with his work and that kind of thing. So,
well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that struck me was, I'm an illustrator, so of course when I see people actually doing something other than bowls and things,
yeah.
I get excited. I got excited with Lisa's work because she's sort of stopped doing figurative or potter's type wheel type objects, and she's out going out grabbing rocks out of the bush and firing them and glazing them with weird sort of approaches, and that once again is another sort of approach, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm the
same. Like, I look at nature a lot into incorporating my practice and different things in different ways, and I'm studying to be a science teacher, so all that kind of comes into it as well. Like, I'm learning as I'm teaching and, you know, and doing experiments and different things, so yeah, so it's a good way to bring it all together into my practice.
Yeah, but of course, being an illustrator, you know, I do a lot of character concept work. And so immediately I see, you know, your figurative work and your faces with, you know, animal ears and things like that.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
Drawn to it straight away. So
yeah, well, a lot of my work's based on the story Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of magic realism and that kind of adventure and, like, expression of emotions and that kind of thing. So I'm taking that type of story and bringing it into like a three-dimensional kind of story
Brilliant stuff. Yeah. No. Well, I've just been we've just recently been talking to people from the radio players who are doing Alice Through the Looking Glass down at the Palais, and I responded to that because as an illustrator, I did a whole series of Lewis Carroll-style illustrations for a tea blend company. You know, we put all the characters on the side of the tea blends. And so that immediately struck a chord with me when I saw your
work. And I totally relate to that kind of, like you say, that illustrative storytelling kind of thing, yeah. where definitely those, more so.
Yeah, no, definitely where those characters sort of come out of the clay. I think that's really interesting. So, so how many works are you going to have in Hands or Clay?
I think I've got 11 there or right. so. Okay. So, yeah, and they're all really different. I tried to send a range down so that because people aren't really familiar with my work, but I do quite vary from like that 3D sculpture right through to painting on bowls and things.
Right,
so
right.
still that illustrative style, but it's more literal.
And a couple of yours, your pieces also had a very Asiatic feel to them.
Yeah, I'm often drawn to that type of work as well. Like, you know, when I go to exhibitions in the city and that kind of thing, like I'm always looking at the past but also trying to bring it into the future as well.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's just...
But like I said, like connection with nature and that kind of thing, definitely.
Yeah,
you know, a similar kind of parallel to what, you know, the traditional, more traditional kind of bowls and things do. So.
Of course, of course. And with the firing and things like that, do you have kilns at home?
I ended up in 2019, like, setting up a studio at my place just because I'm out at Gilgandra. There's not... you know, much access to different things. I tried, you know, approaching the local school and the TAFE and different things, but it was just much easier doing best in my own practice to set something up. So,
of course, yeah.
So it's allowed me to really practice and grow and work my processes like a lot better than having to rely on something else.
Yeah, no, it's a bit like you're sort of in the Seven Valleys area. There are quite a few people doing ceramics, and so a couple of the artists were saying, oh yes, I have, if I travel, you know, a little bit, I can get access to someone else with a different sort of setup as far as the kilns go.
But it
is still fairly spread out.
It is, and well, I'm lucky enough that in Canamble, which is an hour drive for me, there's a ceramics collective.
All right.
And they have a studio there, which that's where I went to have lessons to start, and they had a kiln and stuff, so that's how I started from 2015 to probably 2018, like travelling down there and using their kiln and that kind of thing.
Right.
But once I started working full-time here, like I just didn't have the time to travel. And also like the fragility of ceramics is just too hard to get down there.
Of course.
Yeah, so I ended up, setting up here. And I miss the creative connection with that community. I mean, I'm still connected to them, but it's just not that regular contact and that kind of thing, which is why it's great to have a group show like this one where I can meet new artists and talk. And
no, of course, you've got 13 people in this one, so
it's so good.
Fair group, and so far everybody we've talked to, I've got a lot of respect for them. It seems it's going to be a really good exhibition.
Yeah, well, I'm so looking forward to it. Like I said, a lot of these people I haven't met, I've just seen their work, but they're at the top of ceramics in Australia, and they're people that I really admire and I've looked up to like the whole time I've been making ceramics. So can't wait to meet them and and talk a bit more about their creative practice.
So we've got it happening on this week. Now it actually opens on the 28th, but the opening is on the Saturday.
Yeah. Yep. 2 p.m. Yep.
On the 30th. You're going to be down there on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going to try and make it. It's a bit of a drive from there. It's about 4 hours, but we'll see how we go and dodge some roos on the way back. But
right.
Yeah, but it should be good. And yeah, like I said, I'm looking forward to meeting everyone. And Sharon was so lovely when I dropped off the work and so welcoming and everything. So I was definitely going to try and make it back. And then I'm coming down on the 27th to do a day as well.
That's what I was going to ask, when your day was.
So the 27th. So towards the end of the show,
right.
I'll be down, which is a Saturday. Just
yep. Well, we'll mention that in the post when we're promoting the show. But I think if people can't make the opening, it's definitely pick one of the days when one or two of the artists are going to be in.
And the biggest thing for me is making that, having that conversation with people, with my audience, and that's what pushes me forward into like exploring new ideas and different things. And people see different things in my work because it is so out there for interpretation. So it's interesting having those conversations. So I'm looking forward to having a bit more of that.
Well, as I mentioned, you know, I had an instant reaction to the work. So I think you're going to have a lot of people paying attention and wanting to wanting to ask you about what they see.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the great thing about it is people, everybody's different interpretations. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Melissa.
And, yeah, no, thank you.
And have a great exhibition. And
thank you.
Hope it all goes well on Saturday.
Yes, no, it'd be a great day.
Now, with everybody who comes on the show, interviewees, I always ask for a musical reference. Do you listen to music in the studio at all when you're working?
Yeah, I do have quite an eclectic kind of repertoire that I listen to, everything from opera to house music.
Right. Okay. Well, there you are. You've got a nice range. You only have to pick one song.
I'm just trying to think. What have I been listening to lately? I've been listening to, because my theme is, and I've got an exhibition in Dilgandra as well, which is really around feminist themes and women living in rural Australia.
Yep.
So I think, I don't know, I'm just trying to think. Like Nina Simone's a big one for me, Thelma Plum, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
All right. Well, pick a Nina song and we'll play that. All right, thank you, Melissa. And as I said, have a great exhibition. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And here's Nina Simone.
Lovely to talk.
Where it's at. Love me, love me, love me, say you do. Let me fly away with you, for my love is like the wind, and wild as a wind. Give me more than one caress. Satisfy this hungriness. Let the wind blow through your heart. To me.
If you're in the Blue Mountains and find yourself needing your car towed, then call Leo's Towing on 0413 439 091. Leo will come and help you. And not only will Leo come and remove any disused vehicles from your property, as recommended by the RFS, he's also happy to pay you cash for your old car too. Give Leo a call on 0413 439 091. He'll get you out of a tricky breakdown situation and he'll help you clear those old vehicles from your property. That's Leo's Towing on 0413 439.
Are your windows in need of a makeover? Look no further than EasyView Blinds. Serving the Lithgow and Blue Mountains region since 1995, EasyView Blinds is your trusted source for high quality window furnishings. We offer a wide range of indoor solutions, from classic verticals and Venetians to modern sunscreens, panel glides, and honeycomb blinds. Plus, we've got you covered with plantation shutters, awnings, and roller shutters. And the best part? We come to you, measure your windows, and discuss the perfect affordable furnishings for your space. No obligations. Contact EasyView Blinds today at 02-6351 2518. EasyView Blinds. Your window to a brighter home.
Everyone here at Radio Blue Mountains would like to wish you a very happy Easter weekend.